I'm going to give a talk in a few moments, and everyone's welcome. And as usual, this talk is traveling around the world on the internet. So welcome people in distant lands. Very good. As usual, 2 minutes ago, I hadn't got any clue what I was going to talk about. It's really good, this just having enough confidence, you can just sit in front of people and just start talking. But because our president, Phil, was talking about what our monastic schedule is going to be for the next 3 months, it's called retreat time. Just remember that as a teacher, you can't just teach through words. Sometimes the example is more powerful than the words. And the example of, you know, your teachers, the monks and nuns, hiding away for 3 months, just meditating, just taking this teaching which you hear every Friday night and actually practicing it and giving you the inspiration and encouragement, as much as you can do, to do the same. Everybody needs a retreat. Moments of silence, moments of rest, moments when we stop struggling in whatever sphere of activity we have in our world. To stop, find some peace, and find out how far we've come. And sometimes how far we need to travel next. But at least we take a pause and a rest on the journey of our life. These moments of retreats. And it's really important for me, as having been here for such a long time, to not just to teach, but also to be compassionate enough to offer other people the opportunity to take those retreats as well. You know, it took about, I don't know how many years to build that retreat center at Jhana Grove. You know, to really offer the opportunity to taste what it's like to step outside the world in which you live, to step outside the world of, you know, family and kids and money and striving and struggling, just to stop for a few days and just to see what it's like. Because this is what we do here. This is Buddhism. It's not just teaching a philosophy. It's not giving you great ideas of how to live your life in a better way. It's actually giving the opportunity to actually do it. It's a great thing to be able to stop and be peaceful. Both physically and emotionally, you gain so much. But first of all, physically. And I spend my life just traveling in aircraft all over the world, really getting tired and jet-lagged. And it's so good to stop all this traveling and become still. I don't know how long I've waited at airports for the aircraft to take off. How long you've waited in those seats. I remember that time, the first time I went to England to visit my family. And of course, in some cheap airline, you know, squashed against the window, and there was this enormous, excuse me, woman sitting next to me. Now, those days I was thin. And I was too afraid as a very humble monk to ask her, can she move over so I can go to the toilet? So I was waiting and waiting and waiting. Monks are very patient. And when she did move to go to the toilet, I made a dash. A dash for the other loo, and made sure I got my business over in time so I could get back before she came in and blocked the seat. Oh, the fun you had as a monk traveling. But it's nice to stop all of that. And to stop all of the other work which, you know, you have to do as a, well, as a monk. You know, you do the job as a priest. In other words, you're looking after all the people, you know, who come here, so that, you know, when a person wants to get married, you give the sort of the blessing for them, so that they, you know, if you, they marry well, then they don't come and bother you afterwards with all their questions about divorces. You bless their kids so the kids grow up well. And
No, you can't really stop that, but there's something which I really ask everybody at the time of retreats, because we also do funeral services. And you know, it's a long way from Bodhinyana Monastery or Dharamsala Monastery into these funeral places in Karakata or Fremantle. So please, I ask all of you, out of kindness to your monks and nuns, please don't die for the next 3 months. Please don't be stubborn and die when you want to die. Think of other people. But no, of course, we will do anything like that for you. But it's nice to stop all of that and have a little bit of peace, which is what we do, teaching by example. Because when you do stop, again, your health improves enormously. Sometimes we run around so fast. And we ask ourselves, do we really need to run that fast? What are we running after anyway? What's the purpose of how much you have? And look, it's so obvious to me that you, each one of you here, work so hard, you don't have to work that hard and you can still be so successful. So much so that one of my favorite little tales for you, not tales, but little pieces of advice, now, which I usually say very often, never, ever do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. It's a great piece of advice which went down very well in my journeys to Frankfurt and Norway in the last couple of weeks. Now, take that to heart. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. And it's very true, that will happen one day. And imagine you're dead and your ghost comes up and says, look, I never really needed to do all that washing. I never needed to mow the garden. I never needed to do all that stuff. And now look at me, I wasted so much of my life getting things out of the way. So please, your life is very precious. Don't waste it making your house so perfect. And if you can understand that, you can understand what we mean by retreats. You can't expect things to be absolutely perfect and well ordered before you stop and have a rest and have time for yourself and time for your family and time for your spiritual life. Well, there's so many things which we think we have to do in this life. A lot of times you don't have to do this. One of the things I always notice when I leave for a couple of weeks going overseas, the Buddhist society, the monasteries, you guys, you don't all sort of have crises and fall apart. I know that the people in Germany were telling me, that's where I've been for the last couple of weeks, they were telling me that the old German proverb is when the cat's away, the mice dance on the table. And I didn't see any monks dancing on the table, at least they stopped by the time I got back. So it's true that you're not that necessary, that you have to worry that if you stop and are peaceful, that everything's going to go wrong. It doesn't. The power of peace is amazing. I remember and recall this lady who used to come to our group in Armidale. We have a little meditation group there every Tuesday evening. And she told me that it was so difficult to find peace at home when she had 2 small children. But one day, she got so desperate, she said, I am going to meditate no matter what. And of course, what happened as soon as she sat down, I think she had about a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old kid, they started climbing all over her. Mummy, 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 I need to go wee. Mummy, 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 I need a glass of water. But she said, no, I deserve my peace. So she did not react or move. And then they started pulling her hair. Again, she just took it and did not react at all. So then the 2 kids decided to get serious. One of them said, Mummy, Mummy, Johnny has got a knife out of the kitchen drawer. Mummy, Mummy, Julianne has turned on the gas. But I really admire that woman. She says, I don't care, you can kill yourself if you like, blow up the house, I'm meditating. That is the only time you can find some peace. And of course, she carried on meditating for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And when she came out of meditation, she told me they hadn't cut each other up with the kitchen knife. They hadn't blown up the house. They were just sitting quietly in the corner, playing. And from that time on, she'd won her right to find peace in her house. Whenever she sat down, the kids realized, Mummy's meditating. No way can we get hold of her. She's away. And they were very responsible. They didn't play up. So a lot of time, one of the reasons we don't grant ourselves peace is we're so afraid that the world will collapse. Our kids will kill themselves. Now the company will go bankrupt. The Buddhist society will just go bananas if I just, you know, don't leave, if I leave. All of that stuff, of that fear, stops us going on the little retreats of our life. I remember other stories. These are stories from my life here in Perth. You know, we do have these retreats for fortnight, 9-day retreats or weekend retreats. I always remember in the early days here in Perth, there was one guy and he really, really wanted to go on one of these weekend meditation retreats. But the problem was his wife. Because these retreats are held on the weekend. And you know how busy things are on the weekend for you. You know, you work 5 days a week and the weekend is when you do the shopping, the cleaning and all the chores around the house. Take the kids to this, take the kids to that. So he did ask his wife, darling, there's a retreat on this weekend. Can I go? And she said, no, you can't. You've got to take the kids to the soccer. You've got to go and take me to visit grandma today. And you've got all these chores, which I asked you to do last week. You haven't finished yet. And I've got to do the shopping and the cleaning and the washing. No, it's too much to do. No, you can't go. Now, he's a very smart husband. Please, all your husbands, listen to this. He said, okay, darling, I'll help you. The next time was a retreat. The same thing. Darling, there's a retreat on. Can I go today, this retreat? He said, no, my mother-in-law's coming over. Don't you know we've got to fill out all the tax returns this weekend? Don't you know? He said, okay, darling, I'll stay and help. That's what you should do, husbands. Always tell your wife, yes, I'll stay and help. Because it's called wearing her down. Soon. You know, he did it so many times. He said, darling, there's a retreat on this weekend. Can I go? And she said, of course. What do you mean? We've got so much to do this weekend. And she gave the list of things we can go. You can't go and be selfish like that. Okay, you can be selfish. You go and do what you want. So he said, okay. And he went. But what happened next was after he went on just this small retreat for a weekend, when he came back, he was such a nice husband. His wife could see the difference, and she appreciated the difference so much. He came and told us that the next time there was a meditation retreat, he never even needed to ask. She gave him the money and sent him off. Because when you realize the results of actually just giving yourself a retreat, giving yourself some peace, giving yourself some stillness, you realize how important it is, you know, in our modern daily lives. Without that peace, we get tired. And because of tiredness, I say this is one of the main reasons why we get psychological and emotional problems. We lose our resilience. The ability to cope with little difficulties in our life. When we're tired, little things make us very upset and angry. Either driving home, you know, in some traffic jam, or whether somebody cuts in front of us, or whether someone sort of says something nasty to you, or whether, you know, some little thing goes wrong, you get so frustrated, you get angry, you lose your cool. Lots of anger is because of tiredness. And if we could only give ourselves a rest, you would find you will speak more kindly to each other, both at home and in the office. Not only speak kindly to each other, being able to understand each other more. You know what it's like when you're tired? The tiredness obsesses the mind. You just can't listen to others. You can't be sensitive to others.
But it's amazing what happens when you give yourself a rest, both emotionally and physically, how you become far more sensitive and resilient. You just basically can take just the normal difficulties of life, which, you know, are unavoidable. The dog barks, the mobile phone goes off, and you can just, doesn't matter anymore because you are rested. Your mind is soft. I compare it to like a mind being brittle or soft like a sponge. You can drop a sponge, you can hit a sponge, and it doesn't crack. But when something's brittle like a glass and you drop that or kick that, it breaks so easily. And that's like many people's minds. They're so brittle, so easily cracked, so easily hurt. Literally because they've got no resources, no resilience left, no softness left to take, you know, the difficulties and the problems of life. So just giving yourself a bit of rest, it's amazing just how that changes your attitude to life and how it makes you easier to live with. You just don't get so angry. I know a lot of people, they just want to have quick fixes so they don't get so angry at others. And of course, while people who get angry at others also get angry at themselves. It's called guilt. It's called lack of self-esteem, not liking yourself. It's the same thing which you project onto others, you project onto yourselves. And a lot of times that's just because we're basically tired. We just need a little bit more rest. So physically and emotionally, it really heals. So much so that it's a wonderful thing for anybody who has any sickness to be able to rest. Just even going to places, you know, like Frankfurt, you know, one man came up to me, I told this morning to a couple of Sri Lankan doctors, we're trying to get the name of this disease this guy had, but he told me he had this disease when he was 14 years of age. Something wrong with his heartbeat. And because, you know, the heartbeat wasn't acting properly, you know, he wasn't, you know, very fit at all, always struggling to get by. And that sort of that tiredness, that lack of energy stopped him performing well at school and in life. And basically, he was a bit of a mess. And even though this was no Germany, you know, the great medical system there, but even so that he could not really get any relief, doctors, psychologists, whatever, were not helping at all. He was about 35. When he heard me talk on YouTube, followed some of these suggestions, and he came up to me and said, thank you so much, Ajahn Brahm, I just come here to say thank you. Because there's, I think, diasystolis or something like that. He said, no, it's not there anymore. Now I can live. I'm alive. And things like that just show me just how these teachings of learning how to rest your body actually change your life. Sicknesses which can't be budged, you know, by medicine, actually can be budged and overcome and transcended just by simple resting and relaxing and overcoming this tiredness inside of you, which stops, you know, the healing process happening. It's great to have that feedback wherever I go, which means that this little giving yourself a retreat actually works. And giving yourself that retreat, it's not just working just on the physical side, the emotional side works enormously well. So many people like this, well, he's not here today, but I know one of his relations here today. I remember he used to tell me this story that he was working in a government department here in Perth, and he told me that he had a boss from hell. You all know what a boss from hell is because you probably got one yourself. The boss from hell always demands more work than Superman could do, and he wants it yesterday. And even though you really go out of your way to try hard to meet the demands of the work, and you sometimes produce, he's never good enough, he never says thank you, and it always gives you more work to do, impossible schedules to fulfill. And never says thank you once, but you make one little mistake and he's on your back repeatedly for days. I think you know the boss from hell. I don't think any of the monks of Bodhinyana Monastery know the boss from hell because I'm the boss there. But anyhow, he said in a matter of about 3 months, the boss from hell totally transformed to being a nice boss. I remember him telling me that when he changed, this man wanted to do more work for the boss, you know, to actually put in extra hours. Because when you're kind and nice to people, you're motivated. You want to work harder for them. But then this guy, you know, he couldn't help, said, "Boss, you know, you've actually changed. What have you been doing?" And the boss said, "Oh, I found this wonderful Buddhist temple in Nolamara. And I've been going there to learn meditation." And this guy said, "That's my temple. But he hardly ever comes here." You could actually see for the first time he realized, you know, from his own experience, you know, what a little bit of rest and relaxation can really do for you. It's not just the words. It's just the encouragement for you to put aside all those things which you think need to be done and give peace a higher priority in your life. So high a priority, you can actually take the time out to grant yourself moments of peace. This is a poem which I put in the front of Opening the Door of Your Heart, my first book. Grant yourself a moment of peace and you realize how foolishly you've scurried around. Once you get that perspective, you're at peace. What am I rushing around for so much? Things get done. You don't have to rush so hard. We think, "Oh, I have to do this. If I don't finish all this work, the universe will end." It doesn't end. When I went back from Germany, and my monastery was beautiful. This Buddhist society is beautiful. I am irrelevant. I am dispensable. And if I am dispensable, so are you. Which means you can. Actually, your home might have a wonderful weekend without you. So take some time out. And when you do take some time out, it's not, again, just for the health, it's for this emotions, but it's also for the sake of understanding what you're doing here in this world. So often, sometimes people say this as a joke when I ask any questions. Two or three times on my journeys overseas in the last couple of weeks, when I asked any questions, they said, "Yes, Ajahn Brahm, what's the meaning of life?" So that's an easy one. And we all know what the meaning of life is, because that's what you touch when you're at peace. It's not something you explain to people. It's not some theory. Whenever you get still, at peace, and that could be in meditation, that could be in your house, that could be in a garden, that could be on some holiday somewhere, you sit by the beach or by some pool, and you have this beautiful experience. There's nowhere else in the whole world you'd rather be. And just here, wherever that happens to be, with whoever you happen to be with, that beautiful moment of arriving at peace, contentment, freedom. And everyone has had those experiences, you know, for many or short. And you realize that that is something very, very fulfilling and wonderful and spiritual and holy. That's what religion is all about. Those moments, we say in Buddhism, free from wanting. Happy to be here. Whatever it is you have no wants. If a genie came out of a bottle and said you had three wishes, you'll tell the genie to piss off. You don't want any wishes. Thank you very much. I'm happy where I am. Now that's called contentment. That's called peace. That is the meaning of life. That is what we mean by retreat. Retreat from the busyness of life and come into the stillness, which is always there for you. But too often we don't take that chance just to be still. You know, sometimes I ask myself why. Why is it that you have so many opportunities to rest, to be peaceful, to be still, to go on little retreats, to have 5 minutes out, beautiful gardens you can sit in and just be here. Happy to be here, not really want to be anywhere else in the whole world. Why can't we do that? You know, a lot of time is because we're afraid. Afraid to take the chance to let go, to be peace,
and realize right here, right now, the meaning of your life. Sometimes I look to myself and say, I've worked so hard. As each one of you have worked so hard in your life, don't you deserve a few moments of peace? So grant yourself those few moments of peace and happiness. When I was in Frankfurt, I just told somebody that here in Perth, there was one gentleman who comes here very often, is here today, who was having a bit of trouble with his self-esteem and happiness. So I gave him a certificate, a happiness license. It was printed on monastery notepaper with a nice header at the top. And I say, I hereby grant this person permission to be happy at any time, for any reason, or for no reason. Signed, Ajahn Brahm. When I mentioned that story over in Frankfurt, I had so many requests for a happiness certificate. The office, this is no joke, the office was afraid of running out of ink. And one of those people put it on Facebook, and I got emails from Malaysia, can we have some too? So why do you want happiness certificates for? Do you really need permission from someone like me to be happy? But it helps. It's just reminding you, yes, it's okay to have a little retreat in your house at any time, to be happy for any reason or no reason at any time. You don't need to get everything out of the way. You don't need to get all your bills paid off. You don't need to have all those emails answered. You don't need to have everything now, for goodness sake. Grant yourself a moment of peace and you realize how foolishly you've scurried about. The first part, grant yourself that peace. Say to yourself, I deserve a happiness, to peace, contentment. I deserve these 5 minutes of retreat from the busy world of running around getting things done. If you grind yourself, understand what I mean, then you understand the meaning of meditation, the meaning of life. The meaning of life is you work very hard so you can find those moments of peace. You work hard so you can get your house, your garden, you know, your comfort, so you can find peace. Time just to be. Not always going on to the next thing. Sometimes I looked at my life like that, always going on to the next thing. When you are travelling around, going on to the next destination, going on to the next airport, the next plane, the next destination, the next talk. But I realised, as a talk I gave here some time ago, in my life as in your life, there's many of what I call the in-between moments. You know those in-between moments? You're stuck in the traffic, you know, coming home from work. You've left work, but you haven't arrived at home yet. Or you're in the airport, you've checked in, gone through the immigration, and you're sitting down on the chair. Just the plane's not going to leave for another 15 or 20 minutes. You're in between things. There's so many in-between moments of your life that I realized I don't want to waste any of those in-between moments. Those are the moments where I can grant myself peace. There's nothing I can do. The plane is not yet to leave. The traffic lights are not going to change for another 2 or 3 minutes. The appointment to the doctor's is not for another 5 minutes. You've got these wonderful occasions where you can grant yourself peace, just happy to be here. And in these moments, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to be on retreat in the dentist surgery, waiting for me to be called into the chair. That's what we mean by retreats, to grab those moments in your life and make peace with them, and you'll find you'll know how to relax, know how to be here, and find this beautiful contentment where you can find the meaning of life in the most unusual of places. A lot of times people think, yes, you've got to go to the temple or the monastery. You've got to go on top of a mountain in the Himalayas and find a cave where the wise person is and ask them the meaning of life. You'll find if you go to those big caves in the Himalayas, you have to pay a lot of money before they'll tell you the meaning of life. You get it here for free. But you know that. It's just granting yourself that peace, that freedom. It's why that once you understand how to have a retreat in your life, how to grant yourself moments of peace, what you're really doing is understand, I'm giving some deeper teachings now, the two meanings of freedom. And the first of those meanings of freedom we call the freedom of desires. And the second meaning is what we call the freedom from desires. And to understand that, there's an old story which I tell on retreats. I haven't told it here, but those who've been on my retreats will know this story very well. It was the five children playing the wishing game. Five children playing the wishing game goes like this. Every child has a wish, and the child who comes up with the best wish will win the wishing game. So the first child says, I want that new video game, the one I can play on my computer. So I love playing computer games. When I was on the aircraft, I looked over the seat next to me, and there was this guy who was about 40, 45 playing computer games. I only thought it was for kids. Everybody seems to play these stupid computer games. But anyway, he said, I want a new computer game. The second kid had more time to think. So he said, if I had a wish, my wish would be for a computer game store. Because when I have the whole shop, I'll be able to get a new computer game when the next comes out and any game I want instead of just one. I like the whole shop. It's always very important when you have a game like this, never to be the first, because someone has a chance to think and do much better than you. It's like that old, I don't know when the last time I told this joke here. I keep on telling these old jokes because my sources have dried up. Actually, I did hear a new joke the other day, but it's a terrible joke, so I'm going to inflict upon you anyway. I tried this out on one of the people beforehand, and it's, what do you call a crate load of ducks? What do you call a crate load of ducks? A box of quackers. That's a terrible joke. That shows you how desperate I am to try to find new jokes. But anyway, a box of quackers. Hey, somebody laughed. Well done. Thank you so much. That makes me feel much better. Don't worry, I'm going on retreat soon, so you won't hear one of these bad jokes for 3 months. Anyway, going back to the second kid said, okay, if I had a wish, I'd have the computer game store, which left the third kid. And the third kid, again, hearing what the other two kids said, no, if I had a wish, I'd wish for $100 billion US. With $100 billion US, I could buy my own video game store. But the problem is, as every kid would know, your mother and father don't allow you enough time to play your video games. They keep saying you've got to do your homework, you've got to do well at school. So once I bought my own video game store, then I buy my own school. Because if I own a school, I won't need to go, and I can still give myself top marks. Because I employ all the teachers, they have to give me top marks, otherwise I'll sack them. And then once I graduate from my own school, of course I'll buy my own university. You can do that. Private, and again, I hire everybody so I can award myself the top degree. And that way, I can carry on playing computer games and still get top scores and get my degree from university, which satisfies my mother and father. And then when I graduate from university with $100 billion US, I'll have enough money to spend for the rest of my life. You can't sort of spend $100 billion unless you're a government. They did that very easily. But anyway, so he had the $100 billion wish. There were two kids left. So how can they do better than that? Don't say $200 billion, because $200, $300, $100 billion is more money you can ever spend. So the fourth kid said, no, no, I can do much better than that. If I had a wish, my wish would be for 3 wishes. That's a wish. For my first wish, I'll have the computer game store. For my second wish, I will have $100 billion US. And for my third wish, I'll have 3 more wishes. That way I can go on forever. Beat that. So the fourth kid had the infinity of wishes. The fifth child would win the wishing game and managed to come up with a wish which was clearly superior to an infinity of wishes granted. And I say that because I want to give you a chance to see if you can spot the winning answer to the wishing game. A wish which was far better than infinity of wishes granted. Those of you who have heard my retreats know the answer to that or read the books. The fifth child said, if I had a wish, I wish I was so content I never needed a wish again. That was the Buddha. So content, don't need any wishes. That's what we call the freedom from desires. That's what you have on retreat. That's when you can just sit down and just so happy to be here. You don't need or want anything in the whole world. Just the person you're with, the place you're in. Peace, stillness at last. You've arrived. Arrived at the end of the journey of your life. Found that contentment which we're working for. Because why do you work hard? You work hard so you can stop working. You strive so you can get to the end of the road and sit down and take a rest. All of the effort of your life should have an end to it. You should reach that end before you reach your coffin. Otherwise, you'll never be able to appreciate the meaning of life. So that's what we call the freedom of desire, freedom from desires. The fourth kid had the freedom of desires. Whatever you want, you can get it whenever you want. But that's not as superior, this beautiful contentment at peace, which is what we have when we go and retreat. Retreating from this force of the world, always pushing you forward onto the next thing. You say, stop, no, this is good enough. I'm going to stay here. And stop and find some peace. So that's why even the monks and nuns go on retreat at this time. It's giving a very, very strong message. Yeah, we work hard throughout the rest of the year. Really give everything we've got. And sometimes I do get incredibly tired. The schedule which I perform. Part of what I did was actually, it's my nephew's wedding. I surprised him by doing a detour, from Frankfurt just to go to his wedding in the north of England. They couldn't believe I could find the time. And I almost didn't. I just arrived 2 minutes before the bride. My brother thought I was going to walk down the aisle. Because they were waiting. When I was dressed in a gown, it was, pretty much like the bride. But it's amazing just how much time and effort you put into this life. But then you stop. You screech to a halt, which is what happens when we do the retreat. And you're still. Otherwise, I'd feel such a hypocrite. Telling other people to let go and be still when I'm so busy myself. So you have to teach from example. If you don't teach from example, you're like that great story, and you must do this as well. If you've got kids, or you tell your wife something to do, or your wife tells you something to do, please don't be a hypocrite. The key story, which I read when I was young, was the life story of Gandhi. One of those stories, which I will always remember, was when he was studying law in England, in London. And he was staying at a boarding house, and the landlady of the boarding house had a kid who was always causing her trouble. And for some reason, even then, this fellow Gandhi was already a very inspiring person. So the landlady said, look, I don't know why, but my son looks up to you and really admires you. You have influence over my son, where I, as his mother, does not. My son is eating too much sugar. Can you please take him aside and ask him not to eat so much? Yes, madam, said Gandhi. A couple of weeks went past. The landlady took him aside again. Mr. Gandhi, do you remember what I asked you? He said, yes. You remember I asked you to ask my son not to eat so much sugar? He said, yes. He's still eating so much sugar. Why haven't you asked him? He said, well, I did ask him, madam, but only this morning. Why did you wait 2 weeks to ask him to stop taking so much sugar? Because, madam, it took me 2 weeks to stop eating sugar. He would not ask anyone else to do or to stop doing what he was still doing himself. And that was why he became a great man. So if you have any authority, you have to really practice what you teach, first of all. I can never tell you to stop if I can't stop myself. I can never teach you how to meditate if I can't meditate myself. How can I teach you what peace is unless you have peace in your own heart? How can you teach people kindness if you're not kind? So it's really important in our world not to be hypocrites, to find that peace inside, to give yourself that retreat. You deserve it. I was talking with some of the monks about, is Buddhism a religion or not? Because the definition of a religion is the belief in a supernatural. Sometimes people say that peace is supernatural. I would say it's more like supernormal, because not many people achieve that peace and that stillness. But it is certainly supernatural as well, because it takes you out into a different world. Just to touch that world of peace and stillness inside your heart is great. And sometimes when we talk about religions, and sometimes when you talk about the influence religions have had on each other, whenever I go to any interfaith conference with Christians, I always try and point out one phrase in Christianity, in the Christian Bible, which I think is magnificent. It's in Psalms. In Psalms where it says, be still and know you art God. Brilliant little saying in Psalms, in the Christian Bible. And that's, as a Buddhist, I say, fine, great. In still, what you're finding is the supernormal, supernatural, the meaning of life, peace, what they called in that Christian Bible, God. Just by being still, running around all over the world chasing things, stop and be still, and you find the meaning of life. In the Christian Bible, be still and know that that is God. That is the essence, that is the ultimate. Which is one of the reasons why Buddhism is very powerful. It teaches people how to be still, to retreat from the business of the life, to stop running, stop rushing around. You know, when I was in Frankfurt again, I was checking some emails, and one of the people, is one of the caretakers over in Jhana Grove, she was saying, I'm not quite sure why, but it's pretty clear that someone in Harvard Business School is listening to these talks, because there's two of my sayings have now gone on recently on the Harvard Business School blog. One of them is, you may all know about, you know, the glass of water. You know, if you keep holding it, it gets too heavy and you start to get in pain. All you need to do is put it down and rest for a few minutes, and then afterwards you can hold the burden. There's no pain, there's no stress. This is how to deal with the busyness of your life. Rest during the middle of the day. Give yourself a half an hour of meditation. Putting the glass down means that in the afternoon, because you're rested, revived, you can get more work done in less time. So I use the word, it's an investment in your afternoon. And those words verbatim were in the Harvard Business School blog. And the other thing I was saying in there is, lower your expectations. You heard that a couple of weeks ago. Now that's over in Harvard Business School blog. So they're getting some of this from this talk on a Friday evening. This is why it's really important to learn how to be still. It's an investment in your health, in your emotional stability, in the quality of your relationships with others. It's an investment in your business. It's amazing, the power of a little bit of stillness. And more importantly, it gives you the answers to the deepest questions, the meaning of your life. To You get so content, you don't need any more wishes. The person you're living with, they're more than good enough. You don't want them to change. You don't want anybody else. Just them. So content with the person you live with. And the main person you live with, of course, is yourself. So content with yourself. You don't wish yourself to be anything different. Wow, what a wonderful realization that is. You really are at peace. At peace with the person you live with. And amazingly, with this thing we call life, you wouldn't want this life to be any different. Can you get your head around that? If you can, you understand what freedom is. Yeah, there are problems in life, difficulties. Those difficulties, as you heard me say many times, are the shit for the mango tree. Makes it sweet. Without that smelly fertilizer, there's no juice in the mango. All of it now has a purpose, has a meaning. You know, a lot of times when people are traumatized by a loss, by an accident, some terrible thing which happened to them in their life, they often ask, the worst thing about that is not the pain, but the meaninglessness of it. This doesn't have any meaning. Why does this happen? A kid dies, you know, of some accident, some terrible disease. They're only 5, 6 years of age. They haven't had any life yet. An intelligent person commits suicide. People get hit. Why does this happen? Finding meaning in the dark places of life is one of the great challenges. If you could only be still, you'd understand that meaning. It is the pain of life teaches us to be kind. Without that, we would never know how powerful love can be. This is where we find the greatest of meanings. I'll finish off with one story because I'm going way over time. But this is the last talk, so who cares? I heard this story from one of the monks over in England years ago. There was a lady over in England. They were working for a government service, some tax office or something. And they volunteered to spend 6 months volunteering in some drought-ravaged country in Africa. They'd seen on the sort of the TV all these pictures of women and children who just had no water, no food, you know, fly-blown, hungry, desperate. And she just wanted to do something, anything. So she took 6 months off work and joined some organization, I'm not sure what it was, and just volunteered to do anything at this camp. And the work she was given was one of the, what you think, the worst possible jobs. She would go outside of the gate in the morning with a number. And that was the number of people they could feed the next day. The number of new arrivals who would be allowed into the camp who would survive. The ones left outside would probably die before the following day. She had that number because there was limited resources. They just could not feed the huge amounts of people suffering. And she had to be that one, the so-called playing God, who would live and who would die. When I was told this story, I, like the monk who told it to me, thought, what a terrible job that would be. But she said, actually, no. It was one of the most inspiring times of her life. Because when she met the mothers and the children and the fathers who had trekked for such a long way in desperation and explained to them that only so many people would be able to come in and the rest would probably die, these refugees would not say, take me, take me. They said, no, take her, take my kid, take somebody else. In such desperate situations, just the way that people reacted with selflessness and compassion and understanding, with no anger, was just so inspiring. She was moved by how humanity can react in such a beautiful way in the direst of situations. It gave her hope for this world. And then the monk asked, well, what are you doing now? I'm back at work in the government service. And my goodness, that really is depressing compared to what I've been doing before. You know why? Because in government service, maybe everybody out for themselves, what I can get, backstabbing, office politics, gossiping. And sometimes, in the most difficult of situations, the things we think are problems in life, that's actually where we get a window into what's possible and the beauty of compassion, selflessness, and the beautiful things which make life amazing. That's how you can become at peace with the whole of life. Amazing, it can be done. Being on retreat, finding peace, finding stillness, and there you find health, emotional stability, and more important, the great meaning of life. So that's what I'm going to be doing for the next 3 months. Bye bye. So, now some questions about stillness and the meaning of life.
Here we go.
Okay, very good. Okay, we have Gregory from Poland, Anoma from Melbourne, and Lisa from the Netherlands. Ajahn Brahm, I am gay and I am not accepted by my family. They think that I should go for a cure. What to do? Where to go? My advice is your family should go for a cure, not you. It's one of the problems in life when they think that something is not natural. Right here now in Australia, everybody understands and accepts being gay, lesbian, transgender is natural. The discrimination now comes against people like me who are celibate. A lot of people have said, you know, it's not natural to be celibate. You have to have sex. It's not natural being a monk or being a nun. And I say, no, come on. We have gay rights. Now I'm pushing for celibate rights. But unfortunately, one of the reasons is Poland, it's still a very strong Catholic country. And too many people believe the books rather than their hearts. And I tell this to everybody who's listening, whether it's a Buddhist text or whether it's a Christian text or whether it's any little book you get from anywhere, never allow what's written in the book to stand in the way of the truth which you know in your own heart. That has won the day in many countries. Against the dogma, written truth, you know the truth in your heart, in here. The French philosopher Voltaire, he once said, if God was the author of any book, he'd be the author of the truth in the human heart. That is the Bible. That is the Tripitaka. Now, what you know is right, is true. So, please let your family know there's nothing wrong with being gay. They're supposed to love you. Love rules all. In Buddhism, we say, may all beings be happy and well. All beings, love go unconditionally to everybody, gays, transgenders, even criminals. Love goes to everybody. Stretch your love so it's even to even your enemies. Can be done. And that's in Poland, if you're Catholic, that's what Jesus Christ said. To love your enemies as yourself. So love the gays as you would love yourself. No more, no less, as you'd love anybody. So, eventually your family will come round, but you be strong. You win the day for gays. Sometimes, unless we have strong people who say, I'm gay, I'm here, I'm going to stay, unless you have people like that, again, just discrimination keeps on and on and on. You know that some years ago, that I was invited to the gay pride breakfast here in Perth. I'm not gay. I was heterosexual before. Now I'm celibate. So I've never been gay, never felt anything like that at all. But nevertheless, out of respect, I got my invitation to the Gay Pride Breakfast, you know, here in Perth. And I'm very proud of that. Thank you so much. But there was one of the gay activists from Tasmania. And he told this amazing story that I don't mind sharing with you now. In Tasmania, it was one of the last states which had a law which criminalized homosexual activity. If you had gay sex, you had to go to jail. So he kept on, you know, the gay community in Tasmania kept on approaching the government. Look, this is a stupid law, repeat it. Said, I know it's a stupid law. You know, we won't prosecute you, but that wasn't the point. The law was still on the books. So they couldn't convince anybody in the government to change the law. So what they did really great affirmative action. A whole group of them, maybe 100 couples, had sex that night before. No, a lot of gay sex. And they kept a diary of everything they did in detail. And then they turned themselves in at the police station the following morning. Arrest us. And the poor police didn't know what to do because they had to keep the law. Here were people who committed crimes. You know, it was in the statute book, and they had to be arrested. So the cells of this police station were full of these gay couples. And the police got so upset at this, within a couple of days, the Tasmanian state government changed the law. That's how to do it. When he told the story, it's very funny. But anyway, sometimes get all your gay friends together in Poland. Make a stand, because, you know, Poland is part of the European Union. They can't sort of do things like that. Anyway, if that doesn't work, come to Australia. Or even better, Norway. Because in Norway, gay marriage is allowed. Because there was a couple, there were two English girls, and they were on my retreat in Frankfurt. And one of the girls said, I want to introduce you to my wife. The girl said, this is my wife. So they're both wives, no husband. Okay. In Norway, the state allows you to do a state marriage. They said, we didn't get a real religious blessing, so can I do the religious blessing? So I did the religious blessing for the two girls. They're wonderful girls, good Buddhists. Why not, for goodness sake? So if you want to go to Norway, there, you can be gay, get married, and have your full rights, which you deserve. Question two, Anoma from Melbourne. It's very hard to make my mind to go for a retreat, leaving my children and husband. Although my husband gave me permission, I feel that it's very selfish. What do you think? No, it's very kind to your husband and kids. So for 2 or 3 days, they don't have to put up with you. You become a much better mother and wife. And when you come back from a retreat, you get sort of cleansed, happy, sensitive. It's really necessary. You deserve it. That's why sometimes you think, oh, no, as a monk, I'm going to leave you guys and girls for 3 months. Oh, I can't do that. I can't leave you. I should be teaching you all the time. You feed me and then I'm going off on holiday. It's unfair. I said, no, I deserve that. And I come back a much better teacher afterwards. New jokes, new stories, maybe. So this is very important to do that. So Anoma, you deserve it. And your family and kids would be much better. You're also teaching your children it's all right to go away and have time by yourself. So when your kids get into emotional or social trouble later on, they'll know that going on retreat, just being peaceful, being still, they may find some answer to the problems of their life. You're teaching them by example. Question three, how can I eliminate fear from my head? This is Lisa from Netherlands. I'm so stressed that I might miss my bus to work or can't sleep when it's time to do so. It makes me stressed every day. Now, when I got my first bicycle as a child, I was so afraid of falling off. So much so that my hands went white, grasping the handlebars. My body was so stiff, I was afraid of falling off, which is why I fell off many, many times. If you're going to ride a bicycle, you have to relax so your body can adjust when you go around curves. You can move with the bike. When you're afraid, you fall off. I say that story because it is fear which causes you to miss your bus. It is fear which causes you not to be able to go to sleep at night. So it's a fear which is the problem. It is not the answer. You think that if I'm afraid, then I will always make my bus. Sometimes you use that to discipline people, to be afraid of the rod, to be afraid of punishment, and that way you'll get people to behave. It does not work. It makes them so stressed they make more mistakes than otherwise. Certainly that's the way I've been looking after Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine for years. Take away the fear, telling all the monks that you're allowed to make mistakes. When they're not afraid of making mistakes, they don't make so many. Same with you. If you were so afraid coming into this hall, you're not sitting right. Sit up. Don't point your feet to this. Don't do that. If you were so afraid, you felt so tense, you'd actually make more mistakes. When you relax, mistakes disappear. So fear is a problem. So how to eliminate fear from my head? One of the great ways is learning how to be in the present moment. You're here right now. As far as buses are concerned, what I learned in London as a kid, there's always another bus coming behind. So if you don't get the first bus, you can get the second bus. If you don't get the second bus, you can get a taxi. It's okay. Don't worry so much. And if you do get late for work, I know quite a few, there's a couple of people I know that were working for Thai Farmers Bank in New York, in the World Trade Center, on September the 11th. They were late for work. It's a true story. You know what happened? It saved their lives. So sometimes missing the bus might save your life. I told the story of the man in the taxi going to Mumbai airport many years ago. Taxi driver got lost on the way to the airport. He missed his plane. But he wasn't that late. He saw his plane take off from Bombay airport and come straight down again with everybody on board killed. He was late for his plane. And that actually he told me. He told me over at Serpentine Monastery many years ago, that changed his whole life. He wasn't afraid anymore of missing the bus. When he missed his plane, it saved his life. So that's a couple of ways of overcoming fear. Another ways of overcoming fear, you can see in the talks on fear on this YouTube site. Just click in F-E-A-R and you will find many talks. So thank you so much for listening. So I always should say, any questions from here, from Perth? Yeah, there's a question over the back. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, you can have your microphone.
Thanks for the talk. I just wondered if you could speak a bit about the relationship between the peace and acceptance, and also seeing injustice and things that we feel we should act on, and having compassion and that active side of practice.
Yeah, okay. There's a saying from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, if there's something you can do, then worry. If there's nothing you can do, stop worrying. It's just a very easy piece of advice, but very profound. It's the same as the advice given by the British Prime Minister, Harold Macmillan, during the Six-Day War in 1966 between Israel and a host of countries around. When the journalist asked him, what do you think about the problem in the Middle East? And he said, there is no problem in the Middle East. And the journalist was taken aback. What do you mean there's no problem in the Middle East? There's a war going on as we speak. And this great wise statesman said, sir, a problem is something with a solution. If there's no solution, it can't be a problem. And that was very brilliant, because in your life you've only have a certain amount of energy. Do not waste it on things which haven't got solutions. Some of the big problems, you can't see a solution right now. Put that aside and work on things where you can make a difference. But as you're working on things which make a difference, as you know with peace activities, that sometimes you see people who work so hard to try and make a difference in this world get so stressed out, they get frustrated and anger, and they become part of the problem, not the solution anymore. It's really important, anybody who's working hard, to try and help. Please time out. Please to stop. Take note of stillness. Re-energize themselves. Get a fresh perspective. And then afterwards go back to work. Working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, you know, so to speak, you lose it. Which is why it is good, even if you're working hard, to find times of stillness. I never advocate being still all day, 365 days a year. As you know, that I work really hard most of the year. Retreat is where you take time off. Whatever your problem you want to solve in the world, if you don't take that time off, you'll make the problem worse, not better. Hope that, does that make sense? Very good. Okay, so thank you for listening. Have a great time. I will see you again sometime soon, but don't worry too much. There are over 900 talks on the internet by me. If you really get desperate, 900 will last you. And there are many other people who will be giving talks here on the Friday night. Other nuns, such as the nun sitting on my left over here. She is going to be giving some talk. Is it next week? In 2 weeks' time. Who's giving the talk next week? Wei Can. Oh, she's brilliant. She's a Vietnamese nun with a great sense of humour. So she's brilliant. So she's coming next Friday night. So you just get a change. You know, different faces, different stories, different jokes. A nice change. So please keep on coming. There'll always be the meditation and the teachings here on a Friday night. Okay, so that is that program up on the board there, Hugh? Okay. On the notice board in the next to the office, so you can see who's coming next. Okay, very good. We now pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can all go and do what we need to do.